I look out, and I know that's a visual term, but I see an audience of people who are fighting every day to make disability rights a reality. People who are so instrumental in transforming our society. I think it's wonderful to have the theme of this conference be ADA at 50, because for 25 years now, we have fought in the trenches, and we're still in the trenches. We have made immense progress in many areas, but there is so much further to go. And my view is that ADA at 50, I would love to see that we are at least seeing the summit, a world where disability is no longer a prescription for second-class treatment. So I want to touch on a few areas where I think we have made progress, but so much more is needed. And also talk about some of the jurisprudence that we need to work on, and legislation we need to work on. This is really an exciting area for us all, because our movement is the current successor to the civil rights movement of the 1960s. And we are at that moment where African Americans were 40 years ago. And what we do today will have transformative impact. So a few examples of areas where progress has been made, but so much more is needed. Let me just start with transportation. Dr. Silvers talked about how she was on a bus 40 years ago. Buses have been transformed and are, for physical access, a mainstream, universally accessible form of access. Why? Because people put their bodies on the line and lay down the streets and protested and went to jail. We had our Selma moments, and we're still having them. And they have had real-world impact. However, there is so much of the transportation network that remains virtually inaccessible. For example, sidewalk access. The curb cut is the universal symbol for access. And we have achieved a world where in most cities there are a good number of curb cuts. However, in almost every city, county, and state, there are tens of thousands of inaccessible sidewalks in every part of their system. I was just in New York 2 days ago, and in southern Manhattan, I could not, in a wheelchair, go two blocks without risking my life and limb, because at every corner, the curb cuts that existed were crumbling. And were impossible to use without somebody steadying my chair and pushing me. That should not be. That cannot be permitted to continue. And to fix this is going to require concerted effort. You DOJ folks out there, it's been too long for curb cut regulations, sidewalk regulations. I feel like we are waiting for Godot. There's just a decision in San Francisco where the plaintiffs lost on a sidewalk case, and one thing the judge noted is there's no regulations yet from the DOJ on what is an accessible sidewalk. Please do your job so we can do our job and make this world more accessible. The light rail and heavy rail systems, we're still stuck in a model called the key station concept that the ADA accepted 25 years ago that said a little bit of access was good enough. Well, it's not good enough. Key stations don't really make the system accessible. And we need to see in 25 years universal access to all major transportation systems. And that requires some legislative change. And we want to work with you on that. The air travel system. There's no access if you are in a wheelchair. It is abysmal. Coming across the country is extremely difficult. There are many wheelchair users who cannot do it at all. The Air Carrier Access Act is not really an access act. It's a disaccess act that says we should not expect access. That has to change. What's icing on the cake is that what little standards it has are not enforceable, the courts have held, does bring back a joke from Annie Hall. I know Woody Allen is in trouble, but I still love the movie. And one of his jokes was that an old joke, two elderly women at a Catskill Mountain resort, and one of them says, "Boy, the food at this place is really terrible." The other one says, "Yeah, I know, and such small portions." That's how I feel about Air Carrier Access Act. Taxis, just another example. Where did we agree that an entire form of mass transit could be completely inaccessible forever? That is what ADA accepted as a compromise to get adopted, that taxis don't have to be accessible, even if they're new, unless they are in what's called a van. And most taxis, 99%, are not in vans. So the entire taxi system continues to be inaccessible. We did have one bright moment of victory in New York City last year where we were able to argue that the new taxis in that city were vans, and as a result, we were able to get half of the 10,000 taxis in that fleet will be made accessible within 7 years. That's one city. And every other city in the country, the taxi system is abysmal for physical access. And then the same Annie Hall joke, what little access there is, at least for blind people, they don't need to transform the taxis, they just need to transform driver conduct so that they stop for the blind person with a guide dog and pick them up. That we've made a little bit of progress on there, and then that little progress is being undercut by new disruptive technologies such as Uber that come in and replace the taxi systems and do not require even 1% of access for physical access and don't enforce the civil rights laws that require drivers to stop and pick up blind people with guide dogs. That cannot be tolerated. New technologies need to have access as a minimum requirement before they are allowed to transform our economy. I am quickly going to run out of time for my examples. And it's interesting because every aspect of society, every key area, it's symptomatic. It follows the same rule. The regulators have done part of their job. They're often slow in finishing the job. The judges get the idea, but oftentimes don't really enforce it. And procedurally, whatever rights we have often are stripped from us through judicial decisions that undercut enforcement. There's been a lot of talk about the Scribd case, and that's kind of exciting because it's so new. The court in that case got the whole point of the ADA. One of the quotes from the decision is, "The ADA was the most sweeping civil rights legislation since the Civil Rights Act of 1964. When it was enacted, Congress had no conception of how the internet would change global commerce. Now that the internet plays such a critical role in the personal and professional lives of Americans, excluding disabled persons from access to covered entities that use it as their principal means of reaching the public would defeat the purpose of this important civil rights legislation." That's a judge who gets the ADA. And then we have the rest of society. So yesterday, Forbes magazine, not one of our favorite reporters, commenting on this Scribd decision, noted, quote, "The court's conclusion seems to apply equally to all other online content retailers, a universe of tens of thousands of sites. and could extend to every online retailers. That makes the opinion's potential reach breathtaking with enormous financial implications. Many websites do not comply with the ADA today, and the ADA is murky about what compliance requires. As a result, many thousands of websites may have to incur substantial remediation expenses to comply with the ADA. In the interim, this opinion could produce a litigation tsunami against sites that aren't in compliance.
Hooray!
We want that tsunami. But it's what happens when access is not built into the new technologies that are coming on to change our world today and will continue to change our world every year up through ADA 50. If we don't get access built in at the beginning, we will always be fighting against this argument that it's too costly. And that's the battle we need to overcome. And this kind of conference where we share ideas and strategies is just critical in that fight. There's so many other fights that are where we are in the trenches. In education, access to textbooks. It's just boggles me that every year we're still fighting for whether students with sensory disabilities should have the same right to have their course materials at the same time in an accessible format as other students. The University of Pennsylvania settlement with the DOJ was a good start. That's one university out of thousands, and the rest are not doing so well. Prejudice against students who are blind or deaf, it's just continuing to be rampant. And other disabilities. We had a case against Boston University and called the Guggenberger case where the head of that university said, well, if you have a learning disability, there's a community college down the road that should be just fine for you. The judge in that case issued a finding that that was blatant discrimination. That was 10, 15 years ago. Today we have our Jenny, where the school is arguing that a deaf person who's dedicated his life could not be a safe doctor. Inexcusable. The Cannon v. Palmer College that Scott LaBarre just had a wonderful victory on, that college argued that a blind student could not be a safe chiropractor. That kind of blatant discrimination is still everywhere around us. Just 2 months ago in New York City, we settled a case on the day of trial against the New York City Police Department. It had adopted a policy that no police officer could be employed if they used a hearing aid to mitigate their hearing loss. They agreed to drop that policy, but only after we sued them and were on, literally the jury was in the hall waiting, and they had a come to Jesus moment. So, housing, so much needs to be done. Again, where did we decide that 99% of all housing in this country could be completely inaccessible to anyone in a wheelchair? That is the norm today. And there's virtually nobody fighting to overcome that. There is a movement slowly beginning for visitability, which says, new housing should at least allow a wheelchair user to get in the door and get to a bathroom. That has not become the norm anywhere, and it's a fight we have to fight. The criminal justice system continues to basically warehouse so many people with mental and developmental disabilities. The Sheehans of the world are going to continue to die unless we do something about that. The use of solitary confinement against youth with disabilities continues to be rampant. The school to prison pipeline has to be stopped. There's people here working on that, and it's so critical. Universal design, we talk about it, we need to make it the law. Changing the paradigm. The common mainstream culture continues to look at us in views of either pity or heroics. And we don't We shouldn't have to be heroes in order to get on a bus, get on a train, go to work, be treated the same as everyone else. Disability culture, it's exciting because we're at the forefront, trying to challenge some of these mainstream myths and stereotypes. The word disability pride is becoming a notion where we're starting to say, I'm disabled and I'm proud because I'm not a hero, but I'm dealing with it, and I just want to be treated the same. There's been a lot of work on access to sports, but we need to have access to art, to music, to fashion, to all aspects of society. There's so many other cutting-edge issues that we don't have time for, but genetic discrimination, enforcement of the rights that are on paper. Dr. Maurer, you talked about that, that what good is a right without enforcement? Five judges on our Supreme Court do not believe that we should be able to enforce many of our civil rights laws, and they have undercut enforcement strategies, enforcement mechanisms left and right. Pregnancy discrimination, I think we're going to win that battle in the next 5 years. And we have good allies there because pregnancy is a temporary disability. And it shouldn't mean that you have to weigh off your job against being able to take a few months off to care for your child. The issue of affordability of new technologies is something I personally feel very passionate about. Technology has transformed us in so many ways in terms of adaptive technologies. Wheelchairs and other adaptive technologies really are liberating, but what good is it if you can't afford it? And right now there's a campaign called Users First, which is fighting to ensure that people can get their insurers to cover a wheelchair that will actually work and get them mobile. I know so many disabled people who are trapped in their homes because their wheelchairs simply are not meeting basic reliable standards, and they can't get them repaired. And if we're trapped in our homes, it's just another form of civil confinement. Rights of veterans. We often look to veterans because the society supports veteran rights, disabled veterans in particular. But when the rubber hits the road and you want to say, judge, we'd like to enforce the right of veterans with PTSD to get suicide prevention care, we went to trial on that issue, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals threw out our victory and said, veterans have no right to go to court to enforce their due process rights under the Constitution to life, liberty. And that is the law of the land right now because of Supreme Court decisions that need to be changed.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. I'm almost there. Now I get to final point, jurisprudence. Dr. Maurer, you talked about how the states are free to discriminate without being held to pay monetary damages. That's because we have been trapped in the world of what's called rational basis minimum scrutiny. Ever since the Supreme Court in the Claiborne case in 1985 said that disabled people, in that case, the mentally retarded, that's the term they used, should only be entitled to what is called rational basis scrutiny, i.e. social, essentially that the Constitution did not protect such people from discrimination. That case then was followed by so many others, including the Board of Trustees of the University of Alabama v. Garrett in 2001, where a woman who took time off to be treated for breast cancer was denied her job when she sought to return to work. And another 5-4 decision, Judge Rehnquist in that case, held that the state was free to discriminate. And noted, this is his words, that state entities could, quote, quite hard-headedly and perhaps hard-heartedly hold to job qualification requirements which do not make allowance for the disabled. And that's the kind of attitudes and outright discrimination that we are still fighting day to day. I hope that ADA at 50, we won't be fighting those fights. That will be a true model for the rest of the world. We'll sign on to the convention, and we can have a world where disability is just truly a form, one aspect of the continuum of our world. Thank you so much.